come from Bodharma is deep and profound and rarely encountered, even in millions of ages. We now have the chance to see it, hear it, and practice it. May we realize its true meaning. Good morning. Oh, afternoon. That's right. Yes, afternoon. Yeah, that's the first. Oh, that's the second, not a first. So I actually thought what I would do is use this time to introduce something new that's going to be new in our program altogether, which is, I've been really missing it. It's the verse of atonement. So we have a gatha of atonement, and the words to it are all, well, some people say twisted karma, so sometimes the language is twisted karma or evil karma, and there's a nicer translation, which is all separation. So all separation ever committed by me since of old on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, thought, and consciousness, I now atone for it all. And so there's a tradition in the Zen tradition and other traditions as well to have a time where you regularly atone for whatever kinds of karma or separation, which I think is a really good, in this case, translation for karma, whatever kind of separation you have created. And of course that separation can be separation between you and another, but most often it's the separation between you and yourself. It's the separation that you have created between your own truth and your beingness in the world that we most often want to atone for. And atone is nicely laid out to be at one-ment. And so atonement we think of as at-one-ment, so we're taking that separation and bringing it as one again. And so I thought it would be good to introduce it, and I've been pondering for about 2 months about where to put it, because we have, you know, chants here and chants there, and I tell you, it can be very complicated, because there's chants that you do on the 1st and the 15th that are different than every other day, and there's chants for memorial service for teachers that have passed, and there's chants for families that have passed, and there's chants for sick babies, and there's chants for children's services, and I never quite wanted to get that complicated, and I'm missing the verse of atonement. I think it's an important aspect of the way in which we relate to our spiritual life, which is our whole life. The thing is that similarly to the evening verse, where it's, you know, I respectfully remind you, life and death are of supreme importance, and it's sort of like, that is the verse of atonement ceremony, which is called Fusatsu ceremony, is usually kind of a drag. It's kind of done that way. It's like, oh, you know, I've done all these terrible things, and I now must atone for it. I think they must have run into Catholicism somewhere along the way. So for the intention is to not only to atone for our separation, but also to offer gratitude for the ways in which we have been true to ourselves. And so what we'll be doing is having a once-a-month ceremony that will fall on a Wednesday, closest to, or at least as much as my schedule can get, close to a full moon. And that's the Fusatsu, is a full moon ceremony. And so it is on the full moon when things are new again, that and just about to become all fresh and new again, that we atone. And so it seems right to introduce this on New Year's Day, a time when it's also is sort of like all the full moons of the year in one place, the big, big full moon. And so I thought I would bring that to us, and if we could try chanting it. It gets chanted 3 times. And periodically we'll do it also when we have Seshin. It will be the first chant of the morning. And so if we just give it a try, I'll say the words and then you repeat them and then we'll sing it. So we'll do it just once and then we'll sing it 3 times. All separation, ever committed by me, on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
Born of my body, speech, and consciousness.
Born of my body, speech, and consciousness.
I now atone for it all.
I now atone for it all.
And so it sounds like this. All evil, my old one, okay, I'll go back. All separation ever committed by me. All separation ever committed by me. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, speech, and consciousness, born of my body, speech, and consciousness, I now atone for it all. I now atone for it all. All separation ever committed by me, on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, speech, and consciousness, I now atone for it all. All separation ever committed by me, on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, speech, and consciousness, I now atone for it all. All separation ever committed by me, on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, speech, and consciousness, I now atone for it all. We get the hang of it. And so let's talk about that just a little bit. All separation ever committed by me on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. And that's a really important phrase because it takes away like some moment at which our greed, anger, and ignorance. Oh, I became greedy at this point. So don't bother wallowing in such things. It's beginningless. It's throughout time. It's unfathomable. We don't really know where it began, but we know that it is one of the ways in which we manifest our separation from ourselves through greed, anger, and ignorance, which are the traditional 3 root poisons, the things that poison our clarity of vision, our wisdom, and keep us from being able to see things as they truly are and to manifest ourselves truly as we are. So beginningless greed, anger and ignorance, beginningless. We don't have to find, oh, well, yes, when my mother did this, then I became greedy because she fed me lots of ice cream. We don't have to figure it out. It's just beginningless. And there's a, similar to all of the verses that we have that are part of the Mahayana tradition, there's an encompassing quality to it. Just like, you know, the beings being numberless, and we vow to save them all. And delusions being inexhaustible, and yet we vow to transform them. And so this greed, anger, and ignorance, in the same way, is beginningless. And where is it born from? Well, it's born from these three places. The body, our actions, speech, the words that we use, and our thought, our consciousness. And the consciousness, of course, is always very important because it is the seed, it is the root of body and speech, of action and thought, action and words. So we take all of it. We say not just, you know, a little bit of our separation, but all of the separation back throughout time, through all space and time. And if you notice, all of the verses have that quality of just taking it all in. There's no out. There's no easy out. We don't get to escape. We don't get to say, oh, well, you know, I'm just going to account for the, you know, the separation is just this year's separation. Or last week I was kind of, you know, that's a little more like Catholic. Like, you know, I did this particular thing and I want to atone for that particular thing. Well, each time, each month, we'll atone for all of it. All of it. Just in case we let any of it slip under the rug. Just in case any of it escaped. And the truth is that not only are we atoning for our own separation, we're atoning for the separation of all beings. We're atoning for the separation that has ever happened. And if it's happened through us, it's happened through everyone, and we have to atone for all of it and take responsibility for all of it. So we don't get to skirt out and just say, you know, this is my little part and I'm just going to do my little part. That's the big difference in the second turning of the wheel, going from the arhat ideal of one enlightenment for oneself and going to the notion of enlightenment that is actually held off, truly held off, until all other beings are enlightened as well. And there's a deep teaching in that understanding of why that has to happen. Because really, where is the enlightenment? Where is the satisfaction of the enlightenment if there are other beings suffering? And after a few hundred years, somebody figured that out. They said, you know, this is all well and good, but there are still all these other beings that are suffering. And how can I just be in my bliss and be in this, go to this space of bliss that is no longer considering the plight of children that don't have anything to eat, you know, the way that the public schools are run, the way that the country is being run into the ground, the brown people that are being killed in other parts of the world and right here in our own country by not just action but also inaction. How can I just go into this place that is removed and let go of all of that and truly be fully and completely enlightened? And that's why in the Heart Sutra there is, the text says, supreme perfect enlightenment, which is different from just the regular old enlightenment. Like, there's actually this different quality that says, yes, you can have kind of an enlightenment that is the arhat enlightenment, that is just for yourself, and you go off into nirvana, bliss land, and, you know, I guess you go right along and enjoy yourself, and that's just it. But then there is this supreme, perfect enlightenment, and it is only possible when the aspiration to save all beings is truly raised, and truly brought to the forefront. And not only is that aspiration brought to the forefront, and how does it come to the forefront? It comes from the recognition of our own pain and our own suffering. And truly, if we feel our own pain and our own suffering, how is it right at all? How will it ever really work for us to just clean up our little stuff and sit there while other people are in pain and they're suffering. And that's always a tricky balance for us to figure out, like, what is the line? How do we really make sense of how to really take care of all beings, right? Does it mean that we run out and literally go to each person's door and find out who's suffering there and, you know, see if we can fix their situation? No, that's not the idea. It's about the aspiration and the deep intention that your life is of service. Your life is given over to this deep intention, this heartfulness that says, I'm practicing so that I can be the best person that I can possibly be, so that I can truly be of service, that I can truly be available. And not of service in this way that is, you know, very rigid and says something about, you know, soup kitchens or homeless people, but, you know, in service means being truly yourself, that you are truly yourself, that you come to the place where you have deep knowing of yourself. And no matter what you do, you are manifesting deep wisdom. No matter what you do, no matter what your life path is, no matter what way you show up in the world, if you are committed to knowing yourself deeply, then that in and of itself is a manifestation of service to all beings. And so that's how it folds in on itself. So it's not just like, oh, okay, what we do is we run off, well, who needs to sit here? Because there's all this suffering. We need to just run out and go save people. Why are we sitting here? Because that's not, when we do that, we don't know where it's coming from. We don't know what the root is of our action. We don't know ourselves truly. So we come to know ourselves truly through our practice. And we engage the world, right? And we engage the world. And the reason that we engage the world is because without engaging the world, we have no idea where our practice is at. So there's a story of this guy that goes away, and it's a true story. He goes away, and he goes on retreat for 10 years. He's in New York, and he goes on retreat for 10 years. He's got a little, you know, tiny cabin thing, and he stays on retreat for 10 years. And he comes back, and there's a popular yoga ashram place down in the city that was run by Satchidananda. Its name is escaping me. But he goes, oh, the Ananda Ashram. So he goes back, and he's like, you know, I have been meditating on anger for 10 years. I think I have something to say about it. And they were like, yes, that's so true. You must have just wonderful things to offer. He said, yes, I think so. He said, so can you put me on your schedule so that I can talk about anger and share all of my wisdom? And they said, well, you know, actually right now the program is full for the next few months, so you'll have to do it after the next few months. So he got furious. And there it is. You know, you can do this practice alone, and you can think yourself fully enlightened. But unless you are in the world, rooted in the world, you have no idea. You have no idea where your practice lies. And that's why the refuges are taken in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Because without the Sangha, you have no clue. You may have a wonderful teacher. You may have wonderful teachings. But without the Sangha to rub up against, you don't know where you are. So without being in the world, we don't know where we are. Without committing some kind of separation, we don't know where our practice is. So the idea isn't even to try to figure out how to not create any separation. It's to live that and to live it fully and then to atone for it and learn from it and to receive it in that way completely rather than finding ourselves shrinking into a smaller and smaller box where we're, well, I'm not going to do that because I'm not going to create any separation. And I'm not going to do that because that will create some separation. And then we are just small and we're limited. So the idea is really to live completely, to live completely out loud, and to do the best that we can, and to return to our cushion, to return to the formal practice, that's the dress rehearsal for our life. And then when we find ourselves, you know, we did a little of this, did a little of that, a yelling, a screaming, a nasty thought, an angry wish, you know, subtle glance, you know, all the ways that we have that we can cut people off, or lack of honesty with ourselves about what's really going on with ourselves, where we create a gap in between the way in which we're living and the way in which we know that our life is what's possible for our life. Well, we do it and we see it and we acknowledge it. And the verse of atonement brings us back to being one with it, rather than, as I spoke about last week, creating some kind of artificial environment for ourselves where we just say, oh, I'm just going to, you know, become perfectly unseparated and nothing's ever going to happen. Well, you might as well just sit down, you know, dig a hole and pull it in after you, because that's the only way that you can get to that place. The real thing is to live and to be able to receive and to not make any distinctions between the center and the edges, and to have the edges, the far edges of our behavior, the far edges of our thoughts, the far edges of our actions, the things that we want to make disappear, to pull it in, to reach out and say, yeah, that too, that's part of my world too, that's part of my way of being at this moment in this time. And I atone for it. I come into being with it. I come into an acceptance with it. So last night we sat with the things that were hard for us this year. We put them under our cushions and sat with them instead of going right away to getting rid of them. That's what we all want to do, is just get rid of them. But first we sit with them. First we atone. First we acknowledge. First we make friends. First, we come into relationship with the truth of what has happened. And we allow what is in our past to be trusted as a teaching space that can move us forward, instead of working from a place of aggression that's always from here propelling that way, trying to get away from whatever has been the teaching space for us. So we neither want to cling to the past and drag it with us, but we do want to learn to trust it. We do want to learn from what has already happened. And the only way we can learn from it is if we can be one with it and say, yes, this is true. This is what's been true. And then we can say, and now I atone for it all. And if I'm at one with it now, there's no need to have this sense of something that's dragging behind. It just becomes part of the fullness of who we are. And there's not a separation of, like, the thing that I did back there. Well, you know, I used to be like this. I used to do this kind of thing. I hear people say that a lot. You know, I used to be better. I used to be different. I used to be, you know, something. Well, if you atone, if you bring whatever it is, good, bad, indifferent, we're not even saying these are terrible things, then you don't have to used to be. It just is. It just is. And it's all brought into bear. And then we can trust ourselves. Most of us are not aware of, for the most part, of the rear of our bodies, because we're running away. We're running away from what has already been. We're not trusting in what our teaching space is, right? What we've learned from the past. And so developing an awareness of our past that doesn't cling to it is very important. Having a wish, an aspiration for our future is wonderful, as long as we are not rushing headlong into it with an aggressive place that's trying to hide from the current moment. So it's all this balance, and in the verse of atonement, we bring everything together, beginning with atoning for all of it. We take in every single bit of it, leaving nothing outside. Everything is brought right into the center of the womb, right into the center of our awareness, right into the center of our being. And it's received completely, 100%. Not as less than, not, oh, that's the part that I don't want to really deal with. But all of it received completely. The joy, the pain, the sorrow, the mistakes that we've made, you know, and Lord knows we've made mistakes, you know, many, many mistakes. And if we are not willing to be okay with that, we can't learn from them. We really, really can't. And many, many times I have sat with people and I said, you know, judging yourself is different than being discriminating. And so when we go into this place that just judges, I was terrible, right? Then there's no learning there. There's just more separation. On the other hand, we can't just go to sleep and be like, oh, well, it just never happened. So instead, we develop discriminating wisdom that understands, yes, this happened. And if we allow the feelings in, if we allow the truth of that separation that we have created for ourselves in ourselves in, if we allow it to be there and present, then the mourning of that loss can take place. The grieving of the disappointment that we have in ourselves can actually be present for us. And we can move through it and carry with us the lesson that is a part of that. And so in atonement, there's an effort to do that. In atonement, there's an effort to say, we're not going to just pretend this hasn't happened. We're not going to just say that, you know, it's all out there somehow. I'm going to take responsibility for myself. And I'm going to do it over and over and over again. But once I atone for it, I'm going to let it be. I'm going to let it be a part of me that is a lesson learned, that is a teaching carried forth in the world. But I'm going to let it be something that's here and at one and not there somewhere, dragging me down, holding me back. So in each direction, it's important. It's both important to receive it and to take it and bring it in one with us. And it's also to, once it's there, to let it be there and embrace it fully instead of trying to leave something hanging on to our ankles. And, you know, for each of us, our personality is different. We have very different. Some of us are ankle draggers. We want our traumas and our griefs to... We want to shackle them to our ankles and just drag them around and let them hold us back. And others of us want to skip completely free way before we've even come to just acknowledging the truth of it. So we begin to understand which of our inclinations, you know, which inclination we have. Or there's some of us that just, you know, go dull and forget all of it just completely, if we're neither moving forward or moving backward, but just staying stuck in one place, in a kind of shrinking in ourselves. So we need to discover what is our tendency, and when we do the verse of atonement, when we do the full moon ceremony, we'll have an opportunity to work on whatever our tendency is. And so if you're one of those people that likes to drag the past around with you, then you really need to focus on the now I atone for it all. I am at one for it all. And if you're one of those people that just wants to pretend it didn't happen and skip on along, free and footloose, then you really need to focus on my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, speech, and consciousness. And you need to focus on that. And if you're one of those people that just shuts down and says, well, you know, I don't really know what's happening, and I'm just going to sit here like a lump, then you need to take on the whole thing at once and pull it all in. So each practice, you know, it all sounds like we're all saying the same words. Amy and I were talking a little bit last night about this. No, we're saying the same words, but it's a different practice for each of us. it's not the same practice. We're not having the same practice here. There's something incredibly shared, but our and beautifully shared, but our grief, what we're holding, what we're carrying, what we bring to this cushion each time is very different. What ignites our spirit in a chant is very different. And it's each of your responsibility, not mine. It's your responsibility to find what it is that speaks to you, what it is that draws you forth, what it is that calls you to awakening, and make use of it. You can hang out here for 3 years or 5 years or 10 years and blame somebody for your not being awake, but it will be your own doing if you don't take full responsibility for digging into every aspect and finding what it is that fully connects with you. There's something for everyone. Now, it may not be, you know, well, you don't may not like red cushions, or, you know, don't want to do these chants, or whatever it may be. But really, the variety is designed to create a space for everyone to find something. And the discipline may be too much for some people, and, you know, it may be. But, you know, at some point we have to anchor down and we have to figure out, like, what's it going to be? Or we might as well just kind of go along in our lives and wait until the moment arises that says, I'm ready to wake up. But whatever you do, don't waste your time. You know, don't waste your time. Just like the evening verse says, life and death are extremely important. Time passes swiftly by. And it's so, so true. You can put your awakening off until tomorrow. You can put your awareness of the truth of yourself off until tomorrow, and then another tomorrow, and then another tomorrow. And you will look back and you will not have a life that it was lived. You will have a life that in which you existed, but you didn't live. So with all of the pain and the difficulty that practice brings forth and brings into our consciousness, it truly is the only way to live, is to come into this place in which we receive our whole lives, our whole selves, and become one with it. Enjoy your life. Enjoy your year. Happy New Year. I have no idea with the new timing anymore. Let's just do the four vows. I think we'll take the four vows out of here, but since I can't think of anything else, we'll do them now. Beings are numberless. I vow to awaken them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to transform them. The Dharma is boundless. I vow to perceive it. The awakened way is unattainable. I vow to embody it. Beings are numberless. I vow to awaken them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to transform them. The Dharma is boundless. I vow to perceive it. The awakened way is unattainable. I vow to embody it. Beings are numberless. I vow to awaken them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to transform them. The Dharma is boundless. I vow to perceive it. The awakened way is unattainable. I vow to embody it.